welcome to a new episode of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your hosts, 49ers insider Matt Maiocco and 49ers host Laura Britt.
This is 49ers Talk brought to you by Big O Tires. Laura, we have movement on the quarterback front. We have news.
Ish.
We have news that there is no news.
Exactly. Yes. You asked that question, didn't you, in Kyle Shanahan's post-game presser?
I did. I don't know what we're doing here, right? Is he going to make the big announcement? Are trumpets going to be blowing? Are they going to say, you know, I hereby bequeath upon Jimmy Garoppolo to be the starting quarterback of the San Francisco? I didn't know how it was going to work. So as he did say after the game Sunday night, 49ers and the San Diego Chargers. Dang it, I messed up. I meant to say LA Chargers. That's the first time I've done that in years, Laura.
Years.
And how bad am I? I'm in the Los Angeles football stadium.
How sweet is that stadium? It looks awesome on TV.
It's big. And it's, you know what, the 49ers are hoping that they play here three times this season.
Yes. I'm hoping for that too.
Yes. And of course, Super Bowl will be right here at SoFi Stadium.
But did you get your steps in today?
Yes. Well, I got my elevator steps. Does that count?
No, that doesn't count.
It doesn't count. So anyway, when training camp opened, Kyle Shanahan said, there's no competition, no open competition. I would expect Jimmy Garoppolo to be the starter. We'll see what happens. And then after the game on Sunday night, he was asked, has anything changed from your initial thoughts of, you know, where the quarterback situation is? And he said, no, it really hasn't. And so then I asked, well, are you ready? Are you going to make an announcement? And he said, I'll make the announcement when I'm ready. And he's not ready. Obviously, all signs are pointing toward Jimmy Garoppolo. But you know what? As bad as this game started for the 49ers and the 49ers quarterbacks, I thought it ended in very impressive fashion, because I think the thing that's really separated Trey Lance in my way of looking at this whole situation is that he always remains poised. He's steady. He's unflappable. And that is exactly the sense I got from watching him Sunday night, where those first three drives were not great. They were bad. And Kyle Shanahan did not put all the blame on Trey Lance, nor did he put all the blame on the Jimmy Garoppolo interception on Jimmy Garoppolo. But the way Trey Lance kind of hung in there and righted the ship and looked really good and finished strong, I mean, that's another really impressive and positive movement when it comes to the 49ers quarterback situation.
Yeah, I think so. I think you saw some rookie inexperience, as you expect to see from Trey Lance early on. The only thing that I would say, you know, to people that are ready to jump all on the Trey Lance bandwagon is you don't have your starters in. Not that I'm telling anybody anything that they don't already know, but I think it's a good reminder. You know, you don't have all of the starters. You don't have George Kittle. You don't have Trent Williams. You don't have Alex Mack. You don't have a lot of people that are important pieces to the puzzle to make the offense run as it should, and as we'll see once it's the regular season. So also Trey Lance had a lot more opportunities than Jimmy Garoppolo. And I think that's what the preseason is for, is Jimmy Garoppolo has played in the NFL. He's got that experience, the game time experience, and Trey Lance doesn't. So I understand why you would want to keep Trey Lance in for longer as opposed to Jimmy Garoppolo. But I will say it was kind of a interesting moment for me during the game. I'm taking notes, as I do, you know, during every game. And on the Trey Lance interception, I was just typing out, Trey Lance looks very poised in the pocket. And even in that moment, he does, like, he has this calmness about him. He does in the pocket. And we, you know, throughout the game, we text and talk about, you know, what we want to focus in on. And I do feel like in the times that I saw Jimmy Garoppolo, it wasn't as calm, cool, and collected. There's a presence about Trey Lance, and I do believe that. That's not saying that I think Trey Lance is going to be the starter over Jimmy Garoppolo. Just in observations through the television, as all of you are watching too, it does seem that Trey Lance was very calm and that Jimmy just, nothing came easy for Jimmy today. Nothing came easy for him.
Yeah, and the first three drives of the game, Garoppolo has the interception, and then Trey Lance, a third down incomplete pass, and then Trey Lance had an interception. And each of those passes went off the hands of the wide receivers. And, I mean, I would put it more on the quarterbacks, I think, because those guys were open, and I think you should
– They were high. They were high passes.
They weren't great passes. But interestingly enough, Kyle Shanahan put the first two interceptions on the receivers. It's like basically, hey, you got to bail them out. And I would agree with that. Like when you're talking about – and it's three different wide receivers, by the way. It was Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, and Mohamed Sanu. So they each had opportunities to bail out the quarterback, and they didn't. At the same time, the quarterback, you would expect them to make better throws. And so those things didn't happen. And, you know, watching Trey Lance, I've heard it said about him, like, from his days in college, was that sometimes he just had one speed, fastball, fastball, fastball. And I haven't seen that in practice, but I have seen it in the first two games where, you know, part of being a really good quarterback is throwing a catchable ball and making it as easy on the wide receivers as possible. There will be times when he has to throw a bullet in the middle of a defense, and he did that. He did that on the touchdown pass to Sanu, and he really did it on the touchdown pass to Travis Benjamin. But there are other times where a guy is open, where you can take a little bit off it and lead the guy and put it softly into his hands. And I think that Trey will learn that more. And I asked Kyle Shanahan about that after the game, and he did say that, hey, whenever a guy has a really strong arm to begin with, which Trey Lance does, that when he gets really hyped up and excited, you know, in a game situation, well, of course he's going to throw it probably a little bit harder. So that's something that might be the only thing, you know, when you talk about the poise and just how he handles himself, that would probably be like, okay, he can improve on that. He can make his throws a little bit more catchable. At the same time, it's up to these NFL wide receivers who catch passes for a living to make the adjustment and make the receptions.
Yeah, and it's up to the quarterbacks, you know, who do this for a living to make sure that they're not too high. I think that is interesting that Kyle Shanahan did blame it more on the wide receivers. Both are at fault. Neither, you know, if you get fingertips on it, a lot of people say, yeah, you should catch the ball. And for a quarterback, they need to, you know, be more on the money with their throws. But this game, I think people, I don't know if you were checking out 49ers Twitter, but man, people are just losing their minds. They're losing their minds. And we have the answer. Kyle Shanahan said it tonight that he's not willing to say, but that his mind hasn't really changed since the summer. So I still envision Jimmy Garoppolo being the starter for the 49ers week one. I think that Trey Lance showed some of that inexperience, but now that he's getting on the field, getting the playing time, that rookie inexperience will start to dissipate and we'll see more of the confident Trey Lance, you know, whenever his time comes during the regular season.
Yeah, and, you know, these preseason games, the way the 49ers have run them is basically, you know, they're giving playing time to the guys they feel need the playing time to get ready for the season. So you don't see George Kittle. You know, you don't see Raheem Mostert. You don't see, obviously, Nick Bosa, Dee Ford. Javon Kinlaw's been out with a little bit of an injury. You don't see Fred Warner. And you don't see the 49ers starting defensive backs.
Which is going to change the game completely.
Which is going to change the game completely. But you do see Jimmy Garoppolo, a veteran guy. Granted, a veteran guy who doesn't have a whole lot of game experience, relatively speaking. And then, of course, Trey Lance. So this game coming up on Sunday, it will be the final preseason game. This year, there's only three preseason games. And usually the third preseason game is the game where the starters play the bulk of the time and they get all their reps and they get their work and then they take the final game off. Well, this week or this year, instead of the final game being week four, there's going to be no game. So you have the game against the Raiders at Levi's Stadium and then you have a full 2-week break. And yeah, I mean, I would think, you know, Kyle Shanahan joked that, you know, he'll have the answer quarterback. He'll make that announcement sometime before September 12th, which is the week one against the Detroit Lions. But I think that, you know, you have to make that decision. If you're going with Trey Lance, you have to make that decision earlier just to get everybody on board and so that everybody's excited. You know, the team, the veterans know who they're going to be playing with, especially the guys on the offensive line. So, you know, I don't think either one of us has really changed, as Kyle Shanahan hasn't changed. He said that, you know, he always felt that, that Jimmy Garoppolo would win that starting job. And I think all signs point to that. But, you know, I also think that Trey Lance, I asked him, how much time have you spent thinking about whether you're going to be the starter or not? And you know what his answer was, of course, zero. He hasn't spent any time thinking about that. And you know what? I believe him, because I think he's a really focused guy. You should see him on the sideline. Like after he gets off of a series, he and Rich Scangarello go over, they sit on the bench and they pull out those Microsoft Surface, the tablets. And all they're doing is sliding through the pictures. They're talking to each other. Scangarello's on the headset with Kyle Shanahan close by. So this has been an extremely productive learning week. It's been an extremely productive learning experience for Trey Lance. Man, and I think he is just, you know, we've talked about this a lot, but I think he is so much better right now than he was when he started training camp. I think the improvements have been pretty remarkable. And even though there were, you know, some peaks and valleys in the game Sunday against the Chargers, I think ultimately he came out of this game a lot better for the experience.
I would agree 100% on that. And I think a moment that we saw him shine was in that 2-point conversion that ends up getting called back thanks to the holding call. But that was a moment where everybody got to see him use his legs, scramble around, find the end zone, you know, get the 2-point conversion outside of the holding call. So I thought that was a big moment for him, a big moment for him to shine and show what he's capable of on the professional level outside of college. We know that he's capable of doing those things at the collegiate level, but seeing it at this level is a different story.
Yeah, I really thought when I looked at the schedule and how the 49ers would be practicing against the Chargers, I thought this week would be important, and I think it was. I asked Jimmy Garoppolo afterward, like, what did you get more out of the two practices against the Chargers or the preseason game on Sunday night where he played 15 snaps and they had a pretty good drive? Well, he said without question it was the practices. And the reason was, and I'd never thought of it quite this way, you know, when you practice against a team, there's only two teams who see that film. It's the 49ers and the Chargers, right? They're not sharing that film with any other team around the league. And so when you play in a preseason game, both teams are going to be vanilla, right? The Chargers aren't going to show all their defenses because they don't want their week one opponent to be able to see that. The 49ers aren't going to show some of their offensive wrinkles. They're not going to show all their defenses because they don't want the Detroit Lions to see that. But when you're practicing, you can show everything. And so, therefore, Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance practiced against a bunch of different looks, a bunch of different schemes. Heck, they practiced against Joey Bosa and Derwin James, two guys who did not play in this game. And the Chargers practiced against George Kittle and Fred Warner and a lot of guys who didn't play in that game. So from that standpoint, the practices were far more useful than the game. So I just think it was a win-win week for the 49ers. The only kind of sliver of, you know, little bit of bad news coming out of this were, you know, we don't know how long exactly Maurice Hurst, defensive tackle, is going to be out, or Michael Kendricks. Those two got injured very early in the game. Hurst had an ankle injury. Kendricks had a toe injury, so we'll see what happens there. But can we talk about the defensive line?
Can we please?
Wow, I think these guys are pretty good.
I think they're good.
I think they're really good. And that was kind of one of my thoughts for concern for the 49ers going into this season was, will they be able to generate a pass rush? But you see guys like Zach Kerr and you know, before he got injured, Maurice Hurst and Kentavious Street and, you know, DJ Jones. And you see the outside guys like Jordan Willis playing well and Arden Key. And, man, I tell you what, there's going to be some guys who aren't going to make this team from the defensive line who are going to end up playing somewhere in the NFL.
Well, Jordan Willis, I mean, he put the first points on the board in this game with the safety. So that gave the 49ers a 2-0 lead. Baseball score that we're talking about here.
But did that happen in the bottom of the third inning? When was that?
It was the bottom of the fourth, but close enough. Fourth.
Okay. Yeah.
But that was good to see. That gives the defense a little motivation, livens things up a little bit. And yeah, I think this defensive line is going to be really good. I think your concerns about that are probably in a distant memory now.
The 49ers have a tough defense on the field, and Xfinity XFi offers a tough defense against threats. Now, that's a win. Xfinity XFi, can your internet do that? Zach Kerr is a veteran guy. He's been in the league for 8 years. And I asked him after the game about the 49ers defensive line, and he was effusive in the praise of everybody in that room and the coaching. He said he's never been on a defensive line as loaded as this. And, you know, one of those guys that you mentioned, Jordan Willis, you know, he won't be on the roster, the 53-man roster open the season, because he got a 6-game suspension for violating the league's policy on performance-enhancing drugs. But he's one of these guys that he's looked really good in training camp. When he rejoins the team for the 7th game, you know, that could be a spark that they need. And so, man, I'm – across that defensive line, Nick Bosa, I mean, he looks so good. You know what his body fat is?
No, I have no idea what his body
fat is. I was told.
Like zero? 0.1?
It's pretty close. It's 3.
I'm not surprised at all.
Seeing it, he has the lowest body fat of anybody on the team. And you see what his brother said about him? Joey said
he's a menace. He's going to be a menace.
An absolute menace.
I believe Joey, and I believe that Nick Bosa has a 3% body fat, and I hate him for it.
49er fans will love him for it, I think.
I think they will.
And D'Amico Ryan said that he expects Nick Bosa to be a better football player here in the year 2021 than he was as a rookie in 2019. That's how good he looks. He's going to start working into the 11-on-11 drills. I don't think he's going to play against the Raiders, but yeah, I think week one he's going to be a full go, and we'll see. But yeah,
well, since you brought that up,
first expect him to be a menace.
Yeah, and since you brought that up, Kentavious Street spoke for a moment about comparing this defense to the 2019 defense too, and he wasn't. You know, he didn't want to have that like quotable moment that was going to be splashed on every headline, but he said they are comparable, that it's a fair comparison.
Yeah. I mean, they've made a believer out of me. They haven't played a game yet in the regular season, but just to see the kind of the waves of guys who can come in, that's why I think it's going to be really difficult when it comes down to the final cuts on August 31st. I think they're going to keep more defensive linemen than they ordinarily would, unless they can trade a guy. You know, maybe there's a team that feels like their defensive linemen aren't very good, and they can work a trade. But like I said, just about everybody in this camp for the 49ers, every defensive lineman, I think, is going to be playing in the NFL.
So, Matt, I know you got the chance to catch up with Dwight Hicks. We're going to be able to see him very soon on August 31st for our big event at the Concord Pavilion for the Dwight Clark Legacy Series as it continues. But you got the chance to catch up with him. So let's hear your conversation with Dwight Hicks after this.
At Big O Tires, you can trust that you're getting a good deal. Now through September 6th, save $100 instantly on select sets of Big O brand tires. Plus, get $50 by mail-in rebate on purchases of $500 or more on your Big O credit card. Big O Tires, the team you trust.
Well, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome into 49ers Talk Dwight Hicks, known back in 1981 and beyond for being the front man, right, for Dwight Hicks and his Hot Licks. Dwight, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, Matt, you're very welcome. Good to be here.
It's so crazy, isn't it? Looking back, this is the 40th anniversary season of the 49ers' first Super Bowl. And thinking back to that season, I mean, you guys were the stars. I mean, this was before Joe Montana really took off. It was before everything else. But Dwight Hicks and his hot licks, you guys stole the show.
Well, I mean, when they drafted those guys, I was like, okay. And then a reporter came up to me and asked me if I was a little bit worried about my job security. And I said, well, evidently you failed math because they drafted three defensive backs, 1, 2, 3, and there's four guys back there. So, but I knew early on in practice at summer camp that they were damn good athletes. They all came from big programs, and I knew they were competitors. So I was not worried.
Do you get together much these days with Ronnie Lott, Eric Wright, Carlton Williamson?
Oh, Carlton is here in Atlanta, and we played golf a couple times since I've been here lately because there was a pandemic, and it still is, and we couldn't get together. But recently we got together a couple times and played. And we started a DB reunion probably back maybe 6 years ago, I want to say, and we're continuing it. I will be hosting it. I hosted it the opening of Levi Stadium, and I will be hosting it again this year up in the Bay Area.
Nice. Well, we're going to get together on Tuesday, August 31st, and Dwight Hicks and his hot licks will be on stage along with George Seifert. George was the defensive backs coach in 1981. What do you remember about George Seifert that year and how he handled you, the veteran, and the three rookies?
Well, George was a stickler for precision. And he was like a mad scientist. He was as good as Bill Walsh was with his defense of coverages. And I think that that was something that we lacked. But because of them drafting Ronnie, Eric, and Carlton, and we sort of meshed together. And we were able to play together as a group. And it really showed up in 1981.
So, I mean, that's pretty high praise. So you're saying that George Seifert was to defense what Bill Walsh was to offense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We were able to do some things because of the athletic ability of everybody back there. And then getting Fred Dean and Hacksaw Reynolds to solidify the defensive line and linebacking core. Our defensive backs and the coverages, we were able to do a lot of things that a lot of other teams weren't able to do.
And in order to do that, in order for George, the mad scientist, to do that, he has to have some really bright and mature beyond their year players to carry out those assignments, correct?
Well, yes, because number one, they all came from big programs because, you know, SC, Ronnie, and Carlton came from Pitt, and Eric Wright came from Missouri. So they're a pretty big-time program. So he felt that they could handle it. And me being the wildly veteran all of a year and a half, I had a pretty good
pretty good grasp on things.
Pretty good grasp of the defense and what we were doing. I knew all the positions back there. I had to make all the checks. So he felt that with my football acumen and knowing the defenses, I would be able to get those guys in the right spots. And he guessed correctly.
How did the 49ers find you?
I was, I've been cut twice. Once I was drafted by Detroit and then went up and played in Canada for four games. Messed up my ankle, came back, signed with Philly the next year. I grew up right across the bridge from Philadelphia and Pennsauken, New Jersey. And it looked like they were going somewhere. places. So, you know, they bought me in for a tryout. I signed with them. And I thought I had found a home. But evidently that did not work out. The 49ers picked me up midway through that season. I was working in a health food store because my goal and my dream was to play in the NFL. And I felt that if I got into corporate America that, you know, I would make some money and forget all about it. So I just wanted to ensure that I was going to give myself another opportunity to get on with the team. And the 49ers did call me, I think, a game before midseason in 1979. They bought me in for a workout. I remember R.C. Owens picking me up from the airport. I came in and I worked out, had a very good workout. R.C.'s taking me back to the airport, and he says, I know you're probably feel a little down, but for some reason, he says, I think you're going to be back here. Well, he was correct. The next week, they called me up, and I hooked on, and they signed me, and the rest is history.
As I recall, so that's Bill Walsh's first year, and they were going through defensive backs like, I don't know, whatever term you want to use.
33, I think, by the end of the year.
Wow.
And I asked Cedric Harbin, who was a defensive lineman now, I interviewed him one time before he passed, and I said, Cedric, how come, you know, you didn't talk to me early on? He said, Dwight, every time I looked in a huddle, every game, there was somebody new back there. So I didn't want to get to know you if you weren't going to be here. But once I saw you were going to be here, that's when I started talking to you.
Wow. Well, you were there for a long 7 years with the 49ers, 30 interceptions, including 9 interceptions in that 1981 season. And you said, I mean, you weren't all that experienced in the league. How did you kind of manage your role as a leader? And, you know, you had a first round pick, a second round pick, and a third round pick also in that secondary. So what was your leading style? How did you try to, you know, bring those guys along while also kind of taking care of yourself and doing what you had to do to take care of your business?
Well, first thing you have to know is that the secondary works as a unit. One guy could be out of place and it could be a touchdown. So we always talk. At Michigan, there was communication. You always talk and communicated with your corners and your strong safety to make sure everybody was on the same page. And they had the athletic ability to handle their positions. So it was just a matter of getting acclimated to the defenses that we were playing and the coverages, and then the communication. I think more than anything, that and my 1 year experience, but I had been to a couple camps, gave me the experience to do it. I had the confidence as far as my ability. George Seifert had the confidence in me as far as what I could do and what I brought to the table. And it was just a matter of us going out, communicating, and competing. So I was the leader by a year and a half because I was there a year and a half earlier than those guys. So I had the experience. I would lead the drills. I would make the changes in our coverages if need be. If the team came out in a formation that would sort of expose the defense, I was the one to change the coverage, and I had to make sure everybody was on the same page, linebackers and defensive line as well.
Yeah, and then obviously you made a lot of big plays, so you kind of kept it together as a leader. You made big plays. Let's go through each of the guys and tell me what specifically they brought, not just necessarily on the field, but also just kind of temperament. So tell me about Carlton Williamson. What was his kind of forte?
Carlton was kind of quiet, but Carlton was a big hitter too. Playing strong safety, you're like an extra linebacker, so you had to be able to hit. And Carlton had good athletic ability. He was a hitter, but he was kind of quiet. Even though we all communicated and talked to each other back there, Carlton was more the quiet assassin. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. And then the second round pick, Eric Wright, who I think to this day, George Seifert will say he was the prototypical cornerback for his system.
Absolutely. And he played safety in at Missouri. But Eric was so athletic. Eric could have played safety. He could have played corner. And probably could have played strong safety too. However, with his athletic ability, he could be turned around. And by the time the ball got there, Eric was athletic enough to recover and make a play on the ball.
And big too, right? I mean, like kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, six two. We were all kind of around the 6'1", 6'2", size. So we were all kind of the same height. Eric was long, though. Eric played long. I think Eric had long arms. And he had a nose for the football, too. Great timing.
And I'm kind of curious what your first impression of Ronnie Lott was. Because, I mean, he's such a presence. Was he that way as a rookie coming in, too?
Well, he was. Ronnie was physical. That was, everyone knew that he was a physical type of guy. Whether he could play corner or not, you know, we did not know that. But Ronnie was an athlete as well. He played baseball and basketball as well in high school. So he was an all-around athlete. So it was just a matter of him getting acclimated to being out on a corner to be able to cover the receivers and make plays. But yeah, Ronnie was intense. He was intense more than just his personality was that way.
One of the things I just learned was that there was a Bay Area band back in the 60s, Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Martin Wyatt from KGO who yes. gave you guys that nickname. Yes. And it really yes. caught.
Yeah, we had just come back from beating Washington, and they were the team, I think, one of the big teams in the NFC East that was always vying for a playoff spot. And we had just gotten beaten by Atlanta, I believe, the week before. And Walsh had said to us, because we got out hit. And he just came into the meeting and he said to our defense, I guarantee we will not ever be out hit again. And I think that put the seed in there for all of us to be more physical, defensive line, linebackers, and the secondary. And as I said, you know, we all played safety, so we all knew how to hit. So it was just a matter of just being more physical and being on the same page. And after that game, we go to Washington. I had a big game. And I think I scored twice, picked off, had two picks, a fumble recovery for a touchdown. And that's when it kind of all started. And Martin Wyatt, along with a host of fans, that was surprising to us because there were never any fans at the airport when we got back from an away trip. But this trip, I mean, it was full. It was packed. We were cameras everywhere, people screaming. And Martin Wyatt comes up to me and says, well, do you have a nickname for you guys? And I'm like, no, and that wasn't even thinking about one. He says, how about Dwight Hicks and the Hot Licks? I said, well, it sounds good to me. And boom, stop.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, nowadays, I mean, for many years, teams don't even go through the terminal anymore. So that's interesting. In those days, fans could just go to the airport and obviously make it through security. A lot has changed. And just
there was no security. That's why they were there. I mean, they were at the gate and it was mayhem and it was people all over the place. And I knew from 1979, our last game, we beat Tampa Bay and they had needed one more win and they would have made the playoffs. So they came to San Francisco, their next to last game, our next to last game, but our last home game, and figured, but here we go. This is our win. We're going to punch our ticket into the playoffs. Well, we beat them for our second win. The fans stormed the field and tore down the goalposts. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And so I thought, wow, what would happen if we actually got a really good team together and started winning? And it just so happened year later, we did. And they were there full force. The faithful, yeah.
What do you remember about those early days? I guess you would have been there in training camp of 1980. That would have been your first training camp where you're practicing against Joe Montana and Dwight Clark. Was there ever a point where you know, as you come in, you can't win. You can't go all the way without a really good quarterback. At what point did you know, wow, this Joe Montana guy is something else?
Well, I knew Joe had a great pedigree. I mean, he came from Notre Dame. And if you turn on film from his collegiate career, you see him bringing his team back from deficits time and time again on the largest stages on national TV. So what people didn't know about Joe is, number one, what a great athlete he was. And number two, a fierce competitor. So you could see in practice that that Joe was a competitor. He liked to compete, and he was a winner. So it was just a matter of us, you know, getting our defense together and getting a few more positions solidified in our offense, and we were going to be on our way. But you could, even though the fans couldn't see who Joe was, when you practice, you really get to know who is who.
Yeah.
That's how I knew that we were going to be very competitive in the secondary, because even though we were young, these guys competed. And Joe, on the offensive side of the ball, he competed.
So where were you on the sideline? What was your vantage point? What do you remember about the catch?
I always used to love to watch the game. And so I would take a knee far away from people. And we were going on, I believe, the north end of the stadium where that ball was caught. And so I was down on the other opposite sideline, from away from everybody. And all I saw was Joe release it, and I saw the ball go up in the air. I couldn't see whether Dwight had caught it or not, because people start to get up and look. And the fans let me know what happened, because when Dwight caught that ball, the stadium erupted in a roar unlike you've ever heard before. And it's like, wow, okay, he caught it. So now I'm getting my mindset to go back out on defense, because there was still some time left on the clock.
And what was that like to go back out there? Now all the pressure's on you guys.
Well, you know, it's never pressure. It's like we have to go out there and do our job and stop them, because there are 50-some seconds left. Dallas was one of the premier teams in the league, and they had a whole host of great weapons on their offensive side of the ball. So we felt, you know, we just need to come up with a stop. It's like when you're going out on defense, it's like, okay, three and out, and we're gone. Get the ball back for the offense. So that's what our mindset was, to get in, three and out, game over, to give the ball back to our offense. They run out the clock. Yeah. However, they called a play that was perfect for the defense we were playing. And Drew Pearson split this. It was like a seam pattern. And Danny White hit him in stride. Drew Pearson was going to go for six. Eric Wright reaches out, one hand, grabs him by the back of the shoulder pad, and brings him down. Now, today's game, it would be a penalty. The drive would have continued. However, it wasn't a penalty then. Eric brings him down. The next play, Danny White drops back. Somebody hits him. He fumbles. We recover. End of story. Now, I say that to say this. If Eric Wright does not grab and catch Drew Pearson and make the tackle, the catch disappears. It disappears. It's a great catch, but it wouldn't be in NFL lore like it is today. So Eric Wright's play was just as important as the catch, because without Eric Wright's tackle, the catch disappears.
Wow. Yeah, hey, and Dwight, that's a perfect segue, because we're coming together at the Concord Pavilion on Tuesday, August 31st, and we're celebrating the legacy of Dwight Clark. Yes. We're also celebrating Dwight Hicks and his Hot Licks. And it's for a great cause, the Golden Heart Fund, which was Dwight Clark's charity of choice. When we did this project with the letters to 87, his request 2 weeks before he passed away was anything, any money that's raised from any project with my name on it, I want the money to go to the Golden Heart Fund. So it's a great charity, a great time to remember and whatever, just celebrate what that team meant to this area.
Yeah. Well, Dwight Clark was a very giving person anyway. And I always called him, I never called him Dwight. I would always say, my namesake, what's up? So we had a pretty, really good relationship. So him wanting that and wanting to be always giving, especially to guys that he had played with or guys that had played for the organization that have fallen on hard times, because we didn't make the money that they're making now. So if anyone had fallen on hard times, this fund will help these guys in need. So it's the 49ers are like a family. It has always been that way. For Dwight to want that and request that, and for us to make it come to fruition, it warms our heart on his behalf as well.
Yeah, and 49er fans, as you mentioned, they packed the airport back in 1981. They've always been very supportive of you guys, so we hope to see a lot of people out there. Tickets are on sale at letters to 87.com. Learn more about this event we're having. And it's going to be on stage at Concord Pavilion. Dwight, do you feel comfortable on stage? Give me a little bit about your background and your football career.
Look, I played in Michigan in front of over 100,000 people every home game. I remember a reporter asked me when I first got to the Niners, so do you feel nervous out there, playing in front of all these people? And I said to him, I guess you didn't do your homework, because I went to Michigan and I played in front of 105 plus. So if you put those people in Candlestick, it would look half full. So do I get nervous? No. I just concentrate on doing my job. You prepare, you put the effort in, and the games are fun. The practices are the hardest. The games, yeah, it's fun. It's for the fans. It's for us to showcase our talents and show how we play as a team. And I think we did that just about as good as anyone else did in the 80s.
Yeah, and just for people who don't know, you do have an extensive background in acting and voice work as well.
Yes. Been doing that for over 25 years.
How fun is
that? And I guess I just found another passion. I never thought that was going to be my transition. I really wanted to be a coach because I knew the game. I would actually sometimes tell George Seifert what we were going to do. He didn't like it, but since we were on the field, I said, George, I know we didn't do this before, but this is what we're going to do in this game. Because I was a player that watched a lot of film, and I could pick up patterns. And for instance, when we played Miami in the Super Bowl, the second Super Bowl in Palo Alto at Stanford, I saw that third downs, Marino was looking for Nat Moore. When he wanted long passes, big plays, he's going to on the outside, Duper and Clayton. But when they wanted to move the chains on third down, he was looking for Nat Moore. Well, I had to cover Nat Moore in our nickel defense. So I really studied him and his the way he moved. And I noticed that they would do a pick play. They would line him up just outside the tight end. The tight end, he would delay. And then he would come underneath, and Marino would hit him right in the middle of the field, maybe 4 or 5 yards, first down, and they're moving the chains. Well, I saw that. And so I told Carlton, I said, Carlton, we're going to switch, man. He says, what do you mean switch? I said, not men. We're going to switch alignment because Nat Moore wants to come inside. I'm going to line up inside you. He says, but I can't cover Nat Moore because he would be on, look like he'd be covering Nat Moore, but Nat Moore I knew was going to come on the inside. So I said, you won't be able to, you won't have to cover him. Well, George Seifert saw us doing this and he goes, what are you guys doing? I said, George, I've watched a lot of film and this is what they're doing. I said, he says, but we don't switch. I said, we're not switching. We're just switching alignment. And he just bit his lip and just went away. Just make sure you're on the same page. And he leaves. But he knew that I was a student of the game. And he depended on me to understand what we're doing, make sure we're on the same page. And I told Carlton, I said, Carlton, I said, Marino will have to hold the ball because he's going to want to go to Nat Moore. I'm going to be there. He's going to have to hold it. Our rush will probably get there. I said, we'll either get a sack or he just might throw it up for grabs right to you. And he threw it to Carlton near the end zone. Carlton gets the interception. So, I mean, as far as a secondary and working together and believing in one another, and even having George Seifert believe in us and what we were doing, he gave us the liberty to do some things in that nature as long as we were on the same page.
That is great. That is awesome stuff. Hey, this current 49ers team, they don't have defensive backs first, second, and third round, but they do have three guys who are promising. One you probably know pretty well, Ambry Thomas, because he went to Michigan. There's mm-hmm. also Diamador Lenore from Oregon and Talanoa Hufanga. I know you've watched the 49ers a little bit here in the preseason. What you can take this any way you want or whichever way you want, but when you have rookies coming in trying to learn it, like what are the challenges they face, and have you seen those guys, and what do you think of them?
Well, I haven't seen them up close and personal. I've just seen bits and pieces of some of their plays and some of their practices. But the challenges are that the game is much faster. And one thing that I do know is secondary play. I don't care how good your defensive backs are. If you don't have a pass rush, it's going to be a long day. So the 49ers have a pretty darn good pass rush. That will help them out quite a bit. So if they just hone their individual techniques, and I, you know, guys love interceptions, but I always tell young defensive backs, look, number one, it's a learning process. You are going to get beat, number one. You just have to have a short memory. Two, compete, compete, compete. The play isn't over until the whistle blows. So when the ball's in the air, you're still competing. And number three, finish the play. Whatever you're doing, make sure you finish the play, whether it's a tackle, whether it's going for a deflection, or whether you're in on a blitz. Finish the play. Yeah. So that's what I would tell them. And communicate with one another. Communication for the secondary is more important than anything else in the defense, because the linebackers can miss a play, nobody will see. The defensive line, somebody could be off, no one will see. When somebody in the secondary messes up, the whole world sees. So communication is everything to a defensive back. Talk, talk, talk. That we used to have a saying, the defensive backs, you can't have any secrets because you always talk.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, Dwight, I can't wait to hear you talk more on August 31st. We had a great time last year in Walnut Creek at the Lesher Center, and this will be a lot of fun. Dwight Hicks, 4-time Pro Bowl performer, 2-time Super Bowl champ. Hey, thank you so much for joining us on 49ers Talk.
You're very welcome, and I look forward to attending and enjoying the festivities. For the fans, please come on out and support this cause. And I guarantee you, you will have a great time.
Toyota's national sales event is on. This Labor Day, get $750 cash back on six Toyotas, like 2021 RAV4, Camry, CHR, Venza, or any Highlander. Toyota, let's go places. Cash back is available through TMNA and must be applied to transaction. Excludes RAV4 hybrid. Offers end 9/7/21.
All right, we're back on 49ers Talk. And it was fun, obviously, to catch up with Dwight Hicks and talk about all the stuff that goes on in the defensive backfield. And the 49ers are going through that now, as he mentioned there at the end, you know, with the rookie cornerbacks, and three rookies started for the 49ers in the defensive backfield on Sunday against the Chargers. Now, obviously, they're not going to have three rookies starting on this season's team, but, you know, who knows how things could turn out. But a couple guys I'd really like to highlight. One in particular, D'Amador Lenore. I think he, you know, I've been impressed with him, and you know, he made some plays on Sunday, starting a cornerback, and also Talanoa Hufanga, you know, the safety from USC. Not quite Ronnie Lott. You know, Ronnie Lott was from USC. Hufanga, heck, defensive player of the year in the Pac-12, so he's got some talent too. But it's fun to kind of think about the possibility that these guys will be contributors in some way, whether it's special teams or key backups for the 49ers this season, and then, you know, have that opportunity to grow and grow and grow down the road and become maybe frontline starters.
I loved hearing Dwight Hicks, the stories of the past. You know, these are the stories that you don't hear until years later, of just how communication is key and how, you know, certain guys, you don't want to talk to certain guys until, you know, because they had so much turnover on the defense, that guys on the 49ers wouldn't talk to him until they knew that he was going to be around for a while. And then you've got the rookie situation, which is very, you know, similar to what they have going on now. I think he has a great perspective on that. But I do, one big takeaway for me from that was just communication in the secondary and how key it is. And that's something that Dante Whitner, our colleague here at NBC Sports Bay Area, has talked about so much over the past couple of years when I've been working with him. Is the communication. That's something when I'm watching games with him, he's always talking about. He can tell who's communicating and how effective they're communicating, and the communication breakdowns, he calls it before it even happens on the field. So that's something that you can be looking for. And you hear it from Dwight Hicks, you hear it from Dante Whitner. That's something that I'm really going to be honing in on this year as far as the secondary goes, and just seeing what kind of communication they have going on. And I think that that'll point to a lot of their successes and failures throughout this season.
Yeah, it's really good timing, because another guy who talked about the communication was D'Amico Ryans. So there was a practice on Friday where I watched the defense, just focused in on the defense. Jennifer Lee Chan, my colleague, was over watching the offense. The first day of the practices, I was watching the 49ers offense. But one of the things that kind of stood out to me watching the Friday practice was just how good Justin Herbert is, the Chargers quarterback. And he was kind of picking the 49ers apart in a red zone drill. And Hufanga was the guy a lot of times kind of right around the ball, but just not quite there. And afterward, I asked D'Amico about, you know, what was going on there. What can you guys tighten up? And that was the thing he said, like, communication. These guys need to talk better. And we'll go back, we'll watch the film, they'll learn from it. But these guys always have to be talking. They have to know where everybody is. Because, you know, if one guy is just a yard out of place, then even though the other guy might be closer to the ball, maybe it was the other guy who was more responsible for knocking that pass down. So there's a lot that goes into it. And that's what this training camp has been all about for the 49ers on both sides of the ball. You know, whether it's the defensive backs, whether it's the linebackers trying to kind of clog up those seams on the inside routes, especially on third downs, or on its the other side of the ball. And we've talked a lot about Trey Lance, but it's a big learning experience. And just because a mistake is made during a preseason game, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing. In a lot of ways, it can be a very good thing, because it's a learning experience. And, okay, you can kind of check that off the box of, you know, things you've seen and things that you know now how to prepare against. And it's where you run into the problems is when you make the same mistakes over and over. And from what I understand, Trey Lance hasn't been making those same mistakes over and over. So that's why he's kind of put himself still into the conversation, at least as far as we're concerned. I don't know what those conversations are like behind the scenes from the 49ers, other than I know that they're very happy with him, and they're also very happy with Jimmy Garoppolo. So bottom line, I think the 49ers are in much better hands at the quarterback position than they've been in a long, long time.
Yeah, I got to go back to something else that Dwight Hicks said that I thought was really insightful and not really the perspective that you hear all the time in regards to the catch. Of course, the defensive guy focusing in on the defense and saying, you know, that the catch wouldn't be the catch if it weren't for the defensive effort afterwards. And I loved that perspective because it's so true. Everybody, it's easy to focus in on the offense. And you get this, you talk to a player who was there, who was in the moment, and you get the other side of the story too, which I loved.
You know, and Laura, that was never lost on Dwight either. I mean, he knew that, you know, his catch lived on forever because of the guys on the defensive side. It was the tackle from Eric Wright. It was Lawrence Pillars forcing the fumble on Danny White. So there was a lot that went into it. And so I love that we're having this event on August 31st at Concord Pavilion. You and I will be up there, and we'll be with Dwight Hicks and his hot licks, and also George Seifert. And how about those words about George Seifert? He was to defense what Bill Walsh was to offense. So we'd love to have everybody join us at the Concord Pavilion. It's for a great cause, and you can find tickets. They're still available at letters87.com.
One more preseason game, and then it's on.
And then it's on.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know, with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15, discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.